The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
What we want to try to do is give the American people the truth.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Neil deGrasse Tyson. He has keys to the universe.
Actually, it's a key fob.
Right. You have a fob to the universe. Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Amplifying immigration politics.
Republicans want strong borders.
And the run-up to the midterms as Democrats try to flip the election map.
Democrats are trying to drive up as much enthusiasm as they can.
Later, apps targeting kids with ads.
At the age of 4 or 5, they're really vulnerable to marketing messages.
And now, from the Capital One Bank Studios in the CBS News Washington Bureau, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend with the midterm elections as the president tries to amplify immigration politics to encourage Republicans to vote.
Republicans want strong borders, no crime, no chaos, and no caravans.
As caravans from Central America make their way toward the U.S. border, the president announced he's finalizing a plan that would require immigrants seeking asylum to present themselves at a legal port of entry.
Under this plan, the illegal aliens will no longer get a free pass into our country by lodging meritless claims in seeking asylum.
He says immigrants will be held indefinitely in massive tent cities.
The president has ordered more than 5,000 active duty troops to the southwest border and says he's authorized them to use lethal force if migrants throw rocks like they did at the Mexico-Guatemala border.
We will consider that a firearm. Consider it a rifle.
Claims of asylum have spiked in recent years, and there is a backlog of more than 800,000 cases pending in immigration court. Generally, only about 20% of asylum seekers are approved to stay. Nicole Killian, CBS News, The White House.
Expect to hear more about Friday's jobs report on the campaign trail from Republicans and the president.
It was just released, 250,000 new jobs created in the month of October. That was shocking, an incredible number. We also had a wage increase of 3.1%. It's like a perfect increase. It's an incredible number, but it's a perfect increase.
Star power came to Georgia Thursday amid a neck-and-neck governor's race. More from correspondent Nancy Cordes.
The Oprah Show came to Georgia. The media mogul telling a Cobb County crowd that she called Democrat Stacey Abrams out of the blue this week.
I'm here today because Stacey Abrams cares about the things that matter. She cares about Medicaid expansion. She cares about keeping families together.
She also went door to door. To the shock of some Georgia voters. Oprah is a registered independent and has only stumped for one other major candidate.
He is the one. Barack Obama!
Abrams is vying to become the nation's first female African-American governor. Polls show her virtually tied with Georgia's Republican Secretary of State, Brian Kemp. He hit the trail with Vice President Mike Pence.
Like, I heard Oprah's in town today. I'm kind of a big deal, too. You get that? And I got a message. I got a message for all Stacey Abrams' liberal Hollywood friends. This ain't Hollywood. This is Georgia.
The governor's race here has been plagued by accusations of voter suppression, lawsuits filed over registration purges, and polling place closures. Oprah urged minority voters not to be deterred.
And for anybody here who has an ancestor who didn't have the right to vote, and you are choosing not to vote wherever you are in this state, in this country, you are dishonoring your family.
So far, early voting turnout has been roughly double what we saw 4 years ago during the last midterm election. Nancy Cordes, CBS News, Decatur, Georgia.
CBS News political director Caitlin Conan is here in studio with us to talk about what's at stake for Tuesday's election. Let's start with Oprah star power in Georgia for the governor's race. Do you think she has any impact?
You know, I think Democrats are trying to drive up as much enthusiasm as they can, and especially in these deep red states. So having Oprah come campaign for Abrams, former President Obama, they're trying to get as much turnout as they can and hope that enthusiasm will bring people who don't normally turn out to the polls.
But Pence called them Hollywood liberals.
right.
So does that work for or against the people? Folks like Stacey Abrams in Georgia are trying to convince to vote for them.
Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, they have two very different audiences, and Pence is there trying to get Republicans to turn out. And I think they both are just doing as much as they can to negate the other's message, just like you see in every race across the country.
That's a hot governor's race. What about in the House? What key races are you watching there?
So the House map is very dependent on the suburbs and on the coast. When you look at Orange County, there are seven seats that Republicans are holding in California that Democrats are trying to flip. And they need 23 seats to take back the House of Representatives. So they're looking at those California seats where you have changing demographics. One is where Ed Royce retired. There's almost 65% now that district is Asian American and Latino population. So they might view the president's rhetoric on immigration very differently than people in some of these deep red states where you see the president going and focusing more on a Senate map that's in the heartland.
We've got Steve Futterman covering the race for California's 48th congressional district in Orange County, mm-hmm. as you mentioned. Democrats, they're plotting this takeover of the House. How likely is this blue wave that the president says he hardly hears about anymore?
You know, I think anything can happen. I think we started this with Democrats having an edge in enthusiasm, and some of the polling shows that they still do. But since Kavanaugh, I think Kavanaugh did have an effect where it basically made the reds redder and the blues bluer. And so now you're seeing a scenario where the Senate looks a lot more likely to stay in Republican hands. And also some of these districts that the Democrats thought they might be able to flip in the House, in Cincinnati, for example, look like they'll stay more in Republican hands and that they probably won't have as strong a chance of flipping those.
What about the political fallout the day after the election? If things change drastically for Republicans into the advantage of Democrats, how do you think that'll play out politically?
Well, I think there's going to be talk immediately of 2020 and that all of a sudden we're going to be focusing. So I've spent so much time focused on the midterms, and it's going to be all about the presidential election. If Democrats do take over the House, it's what can they actually get done? You're going to have, you know, a Democratic controlled House, but then also potentially a Senate where you've got a bunch of Democratic senators who are thinking about running for president. And how do those messages conflict? And that's something that I'll be watching.
And probably more investigations.
Correct. Yeah, and I'm sure the president will weigh in on those as he tends to do.
CBS News political director Caitlin Conant in studio on the Weekend Roundup.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Coming up, a closer look at the battle for one California congressional district. That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Our Steve Futterman takes a look at the race for California's 48th congressional district.
The 48th district here in Orange County, California, has never elected a Democrat. Now Democrats are trying to change that.
Vote for Harley Ruda and help stop Trump.
The man they are hoping can turn the 48th from red to blue is a former Republican, Harley Ruda.
Never run for office and decided it was time for all of us to be engaged in the political process. And for me, that meant running for office.
And was this prompted by President Trump's ascension to power?
It was a combination of that and the 2016 election in general, where it became a debate about personalities instead of about issues, about addressing what is in front of our country. It became partisan politics, party first, country second mentality. And it's time to elect people who are willing to reach across the aisle and get the work of the country done.
His Republican opponent is a Southern California fixture, 15-term Congressman Dana Rohrabacher.
This time it seems to be a tougher race than you've had before.
Well, this is a very tough race because we have a change in the basic electorate and the basic political flow in our country. Donald Trump has done what he said he was going to do. He was going to shake things up. And when you shake things up, it means that all of the old political ways of doing things and the political coalitions, new coalitions are formed. And so sometimes it's to the good of Republicans and sometimes it's not.
In your particular situation, have there been some negative effects to your bid for reelection?
Well, the negative impacts of my on my reelection have everything to do with the fact that Mr. Trump's personality is different. People, you know, they were upset when they, as differentiated from Ronald Reagan, that it seemed that Mr. Trump, our president, didn't have the same sense of propriety. But you have to sometimes seem a little abrasive to get things done, and Trump is willing to do that.
The 48th District used to be solidly Republican, but the district is evolving. It's more diversified. There are more minorities and more Democrats, and Ruda is going after many of his opponents' positions.
I'm going against Dana Rohrabacher, who's been there for 30 years and hasn't passed a single piece of legislation in 14 years, who has some of the most outlandish ideas, including training and arming children to protect our schools, to not believing in climate change, to saying that homeowners shouldn't have to sell their homes to LGBTQ individuals, and the list goes on and on and on. He simply does not represent the values of the 48th District of California, and for that matter, anybody in America.
In 2016, Hillary Clinton carried the 48th district by just under 2 points. That has given the Democrats hope. But Rohrabacher points out he also won the district in 2016 by more than 16 points.
Hillary may have won down here, but that's because there are a lot of women who wanted there to be a woman president. Obama didn't win down here at all, and my opponent is more like Obama than he is Hillary.
Right now, the race for the 48th District is viewed by most as a toss-up. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Costa Mesa, California.
Meanwhile, Tuesday's elections could make history for women, especially if voters send the first female Muslims to Congress. That includes Michigan Democrat Rashida Tlaib, who correspondent Rena Ninen met.
The first thing that I think about when somebody says you're going to be the first Muslim is celebrate this moment. We changed the course of history at a time we thought it was impossible. And that if you just believe in the possibility of someone like me, this is it.
While many have focused on her faith, Rashida Tlaib says this moment is so much more.
For it to happen at a moment where we really have felt this moment of darkness at a moment where Islamophobia is such a high rate. Like, you don't have to read the Quran to love me. Love the actions. Love the things that I do. Look at those, and that will help people get beyond whatever fear or stereotypical thing that they might be thinking about.
I will uplift you in so many ways.
Tlaib won her Democratic primary in August and is running in Michigan's 13th congressional district. If she wins, she'll be one of the first Muslim women in Congress.
What was the moment where it hit you?
I don't think it's hit me yet. I think people don't realize just how much of a roller coaster it is. And it's happy chaos right now. That's what I describe it as.
Do you believe that a Muslim wave is coming to Congress?
I don't know. I'm all for not waves. I'm all for owning the ocean. Not Muslims, but women.
Tlaib joins the hundreds of women running for office this year. And like many of these candidates, she's also a mom.
Mama, don't do that. She's a mom. She can't help but fix
it. Tlaib was born in the mid-70s in Detroit to Palestinian immigrant parents.
Alhamdulillah.
Her mom, Fatima, says she always believed her daughter would live the American dream.
How does it feel to have your daughter be the next woman in Congress?
God, you know, give us.
She thanks God for it.
Thank God.
I'm the girl from Southwest Detroit that didn't speak English when I started school. You know, I was my mother's translator until I was probably 12 years old, and I remember how people looked at her. I remember the different things that were happening to my family as we were getting, you know, situated and, you know, buying our first home in Southwest Detroit, watching my mother learn how to drive for the first time. All of those experiences come with me.
And the cause closest to her heart, immigration reform.
Your eyes well up when you talk about immigration.
Yes.
Why?
So I went to a predominantly African-American school. I didn't even understand, like, our immigration system. I knew my parents immigrated here. I think growing up in a community where your neighbors are impacted directly, it's hard. and talking about walls and separation and detaining children. I think the immigration system, we have dehumanized it.
Do you feel that the Democratic Party is transforming into something different?
I think it is a new time. It's a new era of the civil rights movement. It's time for a change.
Rena Ninen reporting. And there's a new effort underway to get people to vote.
When all of the votes were counted following the 2016 presidential election, one number stood out.
About 11% of the American population, which is about 21 million voters, did not have the ID that they needed to participate in that election.
So a new organization called Spread the Vote decided to do something about it. They go out to places like community centers and homeless shelters to help people get ID cards.
We work in states that have voter ID laws that are stricter. So right now we are in Virginia, Texas, Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee.
The group is nonpartisan, meaning they don't care who you vote for as long as you get out and vote. Marcus Whitehurst hasn't had an ID in a couple of years.
I lost my wallet, and that's how simple it was.
He says voting is important to have your say-so in how the country is run.
You should vote, period, because that's your right.
But the benefits of the program have extended well beyond the voting booth.
You can't do nothing nowadays without ID.
James Gray says getting an ID has changed his life.
Well, actually helped me with just getting a job again because I've been unemployed since a car accident last November.
The next thing he wants to get is a passport so he can travel. But first, he plans to vote. Mola Lenghi, CBS News, Reston, Virginia.
Up next, another round of U.S. sanctions on Iran.
Millions are now struggling.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS News Radio presents the Intelligence Matters podcast, taking you inside the biggest stories in national security.
How concerned are you?
I'm concerned that the Russians never left.
Each week, former acting director of the CIA, Michael Morell, interviews top leaders from the U.S. intelligence community.
James Clapper, Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, Mike Hayden.
And lucky for you, you won't need a security clearance to listen. The Intelligence Matters podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
The man accused of shooting dead 11 people at a Pittsburgh synagogue, Robert Bowers, pleaded not guilty Thursday to federal charges that could result in the death sentence. President Trump visited Pittsburgh Tuesday, where scores of demonstrators gathered to protest his visit.
Oh, see.
About 1,000 protesters were kept several blocks from the synagogue as the president visited. Many of them didn't want Mr. Trump there at all. Others would have preferred that he waited until the funerals were completed. But there were those who supported the president's visit. I spoke with a Jewish immigrant from Russia who said it was right for the president to come to town. And Mr. Trump spent an hour with the widow of Dr. Richard Gottfried, who was killed in the attack. She is said to have told the president that she wanted to meet him to let him know he was welcome. Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Pittsburgh.
Prison officials are investigating the murder of infamous mobster Whitey Bulger at a federal prison in West Virginia.
The reputed mobster's early morning death was quick and so violent, it was reported that the 89-year-old was unrecognizable. The suspect, a mafia hitman, Freddie Giaz. The Boston Globe says Giaz is one of two inmates under investigation for gouging out Bulger's eyes while beating him in his cell Tuesday morning. Giaz, a career Massachusetts criminal, was in Hazleton for killing another mob boss in 2009.
When I first heard that Mr. Bulger was killed in Hazleton, that's the first thing I thought was Freddie was there.
Daniel Kelly represents Giaz.
He was aware of Whitey Bulger. He had a distaste for informants.
Bulger's violent death mirrored his life and made for gory movie scenes based on the maniac mobster. His death made headlines in the papers that made him infamous. The Boston Globe's Shelley Murphy has reported on Whitey Bulger's mob life for over 30 years and says in prison his cooperation with the FBI made him a target.
Whitey Bulger went to bed that night, and by that morning at 6 a.m., people knew that he was there and were looking for him. And, you know, as for Freddie Giaz, it doesn't take much, I mean, for a 51-year-old to beat an 89-year-old man in a wheelchair to death.
Murphy says few people knew who Freddie Giaz was until now.
In Freddie's mind, does Freddie feel like, you know, he'll be a hero? Probably within the prison population, he would be. I mean, this is a guy who's serving a life sentence, and now he will be known as the guy who killed Whitey Bulger.
The president of the prison's union told us Bulger had been transferred for bad behavior. They also say this facility cut 74 jobs just this year. And because this prison is so dangerous, the inmates here call it Misery Mountain. Nikki Batiste, CBS News, Brewston Mills, West Virginia.
Overseas, Iranians are bracing for a new round of U.S. sanctions that take effect Monday. More from correspondent Elizabeth Palmer in Tehran.
Iran's currency has plunged 70% against the U.S. dollar. And that means everything is more expensive, including basics like food and medicine. Millions are now struggling. Sarah Abadan is one of them.
The price of everything is increasing. We can feel it easily.
What do you think about the current American government led by Mr. Trump?
I think they are awful.
The White House gets a lot of the blame, but not all of it. People rarely say it out loud, but demonstrations across the country show there's public fury with Iran's own inefficient, corrupt government. But for the poor, like many in this crowd, widespread violence and chaos will make their hardship worse. So for now, they're gritting their teeth and scraping by with less.
One of the main goals of the sanctions, according to the White House, is to pressure Iran's government into negotiating a new, improved nuclear deal. Elizabeth Palmer, CBS News, Tehran.
Divers have recovered the flight data recorder from the wreckage of a nearly brand new Lion Air Boeing 737 that crashed off the coast of Indonesia, killing 189 people. Here's CBS News transportation correspondent Chris Van Cleve.
Passengers on the same plane during the flight the day before report their flight was like a roller coaster and the engine made a strange noise throughout. That's unusual. This was a brand new airplane, a Boeing 737 MAX 8. It is one of Boeing's most advanced airplanes.
The cause of Monday's crash is still unknown. The airline's president admitted the aircraft, delivered in August, had a, quote, technical issue in its previous flight Sunday, but insisted the problem was fixed. In a video posted on Facebook purportedly by a passenger on Sunday's flight from Bali to Jakarta, a fellow passenger complains about being stuck on the tarmac while waiting for the repairs. With the doomed plane in the background, they ask for prayers to make it back to Jakarta safely. This is the first accident involving a Boeing 737 MAX jet, which airlines began flying only last year.
This is the 21st century aircraft.
Mark Rosenker is the former chairman of the NTSB.
Is there a reason for concern when one of these brand new airplanes, it's a brand new type of airplane, falls out of the sky?
If Boeing or the carriers in any way, shape, or form felt that there was an issue, then the airplane would be grounded.
More than 4,700 Boeing 737 MAXs have been ordered. 219 are already in service around the world, including 45 operated by U.S. airlines, who say they are closely monitoring the Indonesia crash investigation.
You always have to look at any potential systemic issue, fleet issue. We've not seen anything like this yet.
Boeing is assisting investigators. The 737 is one of the safest airplanes ever built. In the last 50 years, more than 10,000 have been delivered. There have only been about 60 accidents worldwide.
Chris Van Cleve reporting. Venice is one of the cities hit hard by days of storms sweeping across Italy, putting the iconic destination under feet of water.
Locals and tourists wore high boots to wade into the flooded streets of Venice. They still shopped and sat down in restaurants as business owners tried to bail and pump the water out. Venice floods frequently, but officials say this time the tide was exceptional, submerging most of the city for the first time in nearly a decade. Hardest hit, the famed St. Mark's Basilica and Square, where water levels reached nearly 3 feet, making it impossible to see where the land ended and the sea began. A nearby 300-year-old cafe was seriously damaged.
Venezia è una civiltà anfibia.
The cafe's art director calls Venice amphibious and says, "We need to get used to this." Driving rain and gale-force winds have battered much of Italy, pushing containers from ships and sending boats smashing onto shore. A landslide also forced the temporary closure of a highway that connects Italy with Austria, and rivers throughout the country pushed past their banks. Gwen Baumgardner, CBS News.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, apps aimed at kids that aren't so kid-friendly.
The marketing is actually disguised as part of the game.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
It's been a deadly week at school bus stops.
Emergency crews rushed to the scene where a 7-year-old boy became the latest child to die just trying to get to school. It was an apparent hit and run near his school bus stop in central Pennsylvania, at least the fifth such accident in 3 days. In Tampa, shoes and bags scattered the street, where 5 children and 2 adults were struck near their bus stop. 2 children are hospitalized. This girl saw it happen.
That's when we heard it screaming, so I ran there, and then I saw everybody on the ground bleeding.
Just over 24 hours earlier, in Lee County, Mississippi, 9-year-old Dalen Thomas was hit while he approached his bus. And in Indiana Tuesday, a pickup truck fatally struck 9-year-old Olivia Stahl and her 6-year-old twin brothers as they crossed a highway to board their bus.
This deadly week has already triggered calls for extending the length of school bus stop signs and adding cameras to school buses in hopes of catching drivers who pass them illegally. Child safety advocates say illegal passing has reached epidemic proportions and is made worse by distracted driving. Adriana Diaz, CBS News, Chicago.
There's a new call for the FTC to investigate apps targeting young kids. David Monahan is with the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. David, your concern is too many apps are advertising to children?
Well, yeah, they're advertising to children and in a really sneaky way, and they're also trying to lure them to make purchases. And we're talking about apps that are marketed to parents as appropriate for kids under the age of 5. And new research out from University of Michigan finds that the majority of these games are anything but appropriate for young kids. They're really manipulating them into watching ads, a lot of them disguised as part of the gameplay, and they're also luring them to make purchases, either of a better version of the app or certain talents or skills that will make gameplay better. And the researchers found that the kids can't even really enjoy and succeed in the game without watching those ads and making those purchases.
So what's the takeaway here? If you're looking for an app to distract your child, perhaps, how do you pick the right one?
For one thing, you really need to look at the game yourself. We see that you cannot trust the developers of the apps or Google or Apple to just tell you that it's age appropriate. You really want to look at it yourself and see the way the game is played and make sure that your child is not going to be frustrated by being lured to make purchases or see advertisements. I think you can also reach out to Google or Apple, and when you see games that are not appropriate, you can say to them, why are you telling me this is appropriate for a 4 or 5-year-old when it's not? And another important thing, when your child is 4 or 5 years old, you really shouldn't leave them just unsupervised playing a game or looking at a screen. So if you're close by, then you'll be able to see whether it's truly a constructive game or in some cases educational. Some of these are marketed as educational, and they're rife with these marketing tactics.
But David, what's the big deal here? We already exposed our kids to commercials on TV programs, and I'm sure there's settings that can prevent some of these in-app purchases.
Well, a lot of parents, when the child is just 4 or 5, don't want them watching commercials. You know, there are a lot of parents that will only allow their children to watch, let's say, PBS and not be exposed to marketing. You know, if you're seeing a game that's marketed as appropriate for young kids, most parents are not thinking there's going to be advertisements on there. You know, that's not really part of constructive play. And some of these games, the time spent watching ads is almost as much time as the time spent playing the game. I think most parents of 4 and 5-year-olds do not want their kids sitting there watching a bunch of ads. And, you know, kids don't really understand at the age of 4 or 5, they're really vulnerable to marketing messages. They don't really understand that someone is trying to sell them something. And especially with some of these games, the marketing is actually disguised as part of the game. So even an adult might not even understand that some of these things are ads. So it's really unfair to young, impressionable children.
David Monahan with a campaign for a commercial-free childhood on how to choose the right app for your young kid. Good talking to you, David.
Same here. Thanks very much.
The CDC says it's continuing to get more reports of acute flaccid myelitis, known as AFM, affecting kids. It's rare but serious and affects the nervous system. More from reporter Sabrina Cupid in Atlanta.
What makes AFM so scary is that it strikes otherwise healthy children, and there is so little known about it. Ryan Pitt says he wants to know more because of his six-year-old goddaughter.
Not really been around, so I would like to know everything about it, really.
Dr. William Schaffner is a medical director of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases and a professor at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine.
This is not an easy search from the point of view of the laboratory.
He says it's believed that a virus is the leading contender when it comes to a cause, but what's different about it?
The virus can be in the intestinal tract and then has to leave the intestinal tract, and it seeks the spinal cord, and that's where it does its damage.
At Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, Dr. Sumit Verma says they saw one of the first cases of AFM.
So it took us some time to sort of understand this disease a little bit.
Now surrounding states are sending AFM patients here for follow-up care and rehab. Dr. Mobeen Rathore is a pediatric infectious disease specialist in Jacksonville and with the American Academy of Pediatrics.
This time of the year, flu should be a bigger concern to the parents than acute flaccid myelitis, and that's something also you can prevent. You can't really prevent flu, acute flaccid myelitis. Flu you can prevent.
The CDC currently working to find the cause and hopefully offer better direction to doctors and parents. Sabrina Cupid for CBS News Atlanta.
A new patch is helping folks with migraines.
Glenn Brown has been battling migraines since he was a teenager.
A really bad throbbing headache. A lot of times it's like behind my eyes. Sometimes they're moderate, sometimes they're severe. Between work, house stuff, and the kids, life is busy. So if you have a migraine, you're kind of out of commission.
With three or four attacks a month, the 49-year-old relies on oral migraine medication, which can take time to work. But then his doctor told him about an experimental patch that could provide relief quicker.
A medication taken in tablet form doesn't really get absorbed well enough or rapidly enough to provide effective headache relief. This is the patch.
Dr. Agilia Spearing shows us how the patch from Zisano Pharma works. The system uses tiny needles coated with medication to deliver a migraine drug right into the bloodstream.
Once the patch is applied to the skin, these microneedles will penetrate the skin, generally not even deep enough to hit the nerve, so it's not a painful procedure, but deep enough to bring the medication into the circulation.
Glenn has been using the patch for 6 months. He says it's providing relief in just 20 to 45 minutes, and he doesn't feel as sluggish.
It makes a huge difference because then you can get back to your day, you can get back to whatever you're doing.
So far, researchers say patients are tolerating the patch system well, and no serious side effects have been reported. Dr. Malika Marshall, CBS News, Watertown, Massachusetts.
Coming up, the fallout from the investigation into the death of a University of Maryland football player on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up.
CBS News Special Report.
It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News with Jeff Glor.
We're going to begin with our interview with the president late this afternoon.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
The University of Maryland has responded to pressure from the state's governor and students to fire its football coach following an investigation after a player died.
The University of Maryland's decision to fire head football coach DJ Durkin was praised by Jordan McNair's father following his son's death more than 4 months ago.
He's literally making more noise in his absence than he probably would have been here. But again, that was something that, you know, as a family, that we felt as though we were willing to deal with and turn our pain into purpose.
McNair died on June 13th after suffering heat stroke at a May 29th practice. Nearly 2 months later, ESPN published a bombshell report citing a toxic culture in the program with a coaching environment based on fear and intimidation. Coach Durkin was placed on paid administrative leave the following day, and the university launched an investigation. The investigation concluded the program was not toxic, but there was a culture where players were scared to speak out. That led the Board of Regents to reinstate Durkin Tuesday. But the university's president fired Durkin after backlash from students, state officials, and several players. McNair's former roommate, Johnny Jordan.
The right decision was made for justice for Jordan and for everything to be easier for us as players.
We reached out to Coach Durkin but did not hear back. The University Board of Regents said no comment. University President Wallace Lowe said his decision to fire Durkin was not a reflection of how he feels about him. He said he did it in the best interest of the university. Chip Reed, CBS News, College Park, Maryland.
The chairman of the Board of Regents has also stepped down. With the backing of some of the country's biggest music labels like Capitol Records and Def Jams, for nearly 30 years, the Beastie Boys have influenced a generation of fans. Now, correspondent Anthony Mason profiles the group as two surviving members release the Beastie Boys book, chronicling their unlikely rise to fame.
Now, here's a little story I got to tell about three bad brothers.
The Beastie Boys emerged from New York's punk underground in the early 80s.
This is the cover of the book. This is you asking?
Yeah.
They were three teenage kids from nice neighborhoods, lured to the Lower East Side.
All the places were around here. The record store was there on Avenue A.
Adam Ad-Rock Horovitz, Mike D. Diamond, and Adam MCA Yauch just wanted to be part of the scene.
Brass monkey, that funky monkey.
You all went to different schools.
But we would hang out at the same place. We were drawn to the same thing.
Yauch and Diamond rented their first apartment here on Christie Street.
You had a sweatshop above you and a bordello below you.
Yeah, the bordello was on this floor and below.
Alleged. This is alleged. We're not alleged.
But they were allowed to rehearse their music.
As soon as we heard that, it was like, okay, great. Where do we sign?
The group, formed as a punk band, was soon drawn to a new sound.
What did you hear in rap?
That was the first time I heard something that sounded totally radical. You know, that where I was like, wait a second, that's, I don't know what it is, but I want that.
What you want? They signed to a new label, Def Jam Records, who got them a gig opening for an up-and-coming singer named Madonna.
We're gonna play in front of gazillions of teenage girls, and they all hated us.
They really hated us.
Really? And their parents really hated us more.
And how did that
hated
feel?
Us. It was really bad. It was a bit terrible.
I mean, passionately.
Chicken! But in 1986, they made their first album. Mike D played it for Run of Run DMC.
And when we get to the end, he's like, you know, you're going to have a gold album.
Were you ready for what happened?
No.
Licensed to Ill became the first rap album to hit number one. The headline in the Village Voice, Three Jerks Make a Masterpiece.
You gotta fight for your right to party.
Just go along for the ride?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, when you're 19, it's a great ride.
But it got bumpy the next year when a riot broke out at their Liverpool concert. The Beastie's brash behavior became a tabloid target.
By the time we got to this incident in England, we kind of realized, wow, we've become that thing that we were making fun of, and this is not cool. Doesn't feel good, and maybe we should just be ourselves and not do that.
But to their own surprise, the Beastie Boys became rap's most enduring group, producing 7 platinum albums.
Beastie Boys, don't let the beat knee drop.
Up until 2009. When they played the Bonnaroo Music Festival.
You obviously didn't know it was going to be your last concert.
It's better that way.
Soon after the gig, Adam Yauch revealed on YouTube.
And I actually have a form of cancer in
the gland that's over here.
In 2012, less than a month after the band was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Yauch died at 47. The news caused a global outpouring of grief.
How did you feel about that, seeing that, the size of that?
If you had a friend pass away and that happened all around the world, people writing graffiti and doing posters, and it's bizarre, but it felt really good to know that so many people cared about my friend, you know?
Walk with Ad-Rock and Mike B through their old neighborhood.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you right back.
And you'll see how loyal their fans are still.
Thank you for everything!
Like, we're a weird band. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that we're supposed to be a band that lasted this long.
Do you have a greater appreciation for what you've done after you put this all together?
I think we do look back at the sort of the trajectory of it all and the impossibility of it all and the unlikeliness of it all, and we appreciate that.
Born in the rock and the shoe shine.
Anthony Mason with the Beastie Boys. Finally this weekend, KFC shells out.
Harlan Sanders' parents have $11,000 coming their way.
I'm Colonel Harlan Sanders, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about my Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Not that Harlan Sanders, but the baby named after the KFC founder, and this one's a little girl. To boost the sagging popularity of the name Harlan, KFC offered to pay college tuition to whoever named their child in the colonel's honor. Anna Pilson and Decker Platt of Southern Pines, North Carolina, decided they wanted the money and chose the name for their new baby. Harlan Rose weighed in at 8 pounds, 1 ounce when she was born on September 9th. The 11 grand, a nod to the 11 herbs and spices used in KFC's fried chicken. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.